You're listening to the Embrace Running Podcast. I'm Mark.
I'm Elena, and this is episode number 28 for July 16th, 2012.
Welcome to the podcast where we talk about all kinds of running topics.
Races, gear, nutrition.
Everything in between.
Yeah.
So no race report to do this week. We didn't run a race this past weekend.
Kind of a shock. Get a break.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you're sick of the race reports, I guess it's a nice little break. I think our big topic today, later on, we're going to talk about kind of traveling and running.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess before we get to that, we got some small stuff to talk about, but we'll kick it off with how our weeks went.
You want to start?
I will start first.
Okay.
And now I'm done. So you can go ahead and go next. No, I ran 0 miles this week. So I got that very depressing email today, recording this on Monday, from Daily Mile.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that before.
Yeah, you get that sad email that says, you know, your friends miss your training. So I'm like, oh, bummer. But yeah, I guess it was only a week ago we did our endurance run.
The Dirty Dozen.
It was a week ago, yeah, right? Yeah, it seems like a really long time ago.
Yeah, but it was really just a week ago.
Yeah, so I did my 20 miles, and I purposely was going to take several days off to kind of recover from that, because 20 was a lot for me. And then it just turned into a really hot week.
Yeah.
Weather around here was like creeping into the 90s and the 100s.
Yeah, 100s plus.
And there was one night I think I went outside at, I think it was like, must have been like 9 o'clock, and it still felt like 85, 88, 90 degrees outside.
Yeah.
So I was like, well.
And the AC broke.
AC broke. We talked about that last show. So we got that fixed this week.
Yeah.
But not until I think it was Thursday. So I was definitely sweating it out for the week and just, you know, had no interest in going out for a run in that kind of heat. And no excuse for the weekend. I actually should have gone out Saturday or Sunday and have no explanation why I didn't. I just pretty much, I guess, wrote the week off. So
it's just one of those weeks.
Just one of those weeks. We all have bad weeks, off weeks. Well, I always like to say we have bad days, but hopefully not too many bad weeks. But like I said, because for me it was kind of a recovery after an awesome 20-mile race.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about it, or I'm not hugely disappointed about it or anything like that. So this week I'll kind of jump right back into the training, hopefully back to my Tuesday, Thursday thing, and we'll see how it goes. So you did not blow off the entire week.
I didn't blow off the entire week, but I had a pretty, I guess, like low mileage week for me. I think kind of for the same reasons as you, kind of just recovery from our endurance race, the Dirty Dozen or Half Dozen, you know, kind of doing 31 miles or whatever, you know, never running that far. So just kind of, you know, a couple days after that, just kind of wanted to rest and stuff. And then, it was hot and I just kind of felt kind of lazy. And then but I did get some runs in. I think I ran 4 days, I think. So I think I got a mileage wise, I think I was like at 22 or 23 miles. So I still got some runs in. Most of them felt pretty good, but Saturday I was going to do a long run and I just wasn't feeling it. Like my legs felt good. Nothing in particular hurt or bothered me, but it was just like, it just felt like every step was like a struggle for really no reason. I think I just wasn't just, I don't know. Just didn't feel it.
Just an off day?
Yeah, just an off day. So, you know, instead of like torturing myself and trying to do a long run, I cut it short for me. I did 6 miles and then just kind of came home and said, you know what, just one of those days. And, you know, it's my recovery week. I'm not too stressed out about it. I'm not, you know, in training mode for anything in particular right now. So that's okay. But I did get, you know, like 22 or 23 miles in. So that was pretty good. But I actually got back on the spinner 2 times this week. So I actually upped it once from weeks prior. So I was happy about that. But I think the Tour de France is helping with that, because I get kind of pumped up, like wanted to, you know, jump on the spinner and, you know, because we've been watching the tour this week. If anybody, you know, watches, yeah, it's so I've been, you know, just kind of excited with that. Like, okay, you know, going to hop on the bike and pretend I'm, you know, one of them or something. Okay, not that far, but still just, you know, spinner twice, and actually got back to my weight training too, because I hadn't done that for several weeks after my fall on the trail in Yosemite. So got back to that. So overall, it was an okay week. It was kind of, running wise, it was kind of eh, but I was okay with that. So hopefully this week kind of get back into it.
Yeah, and I will say, actually, we talked about after the 20-miler last weekend, felt absolutely wrecked like that night and the next morning. But I said I kind of felt like I bounced back pretty well.
Yeah.
And yeah, the whole week I never really felt any ill effects from running the 20. No injuries. You know, my IT band bothered me a little bit, but that's kind of the norm. So no big deal. So surprisingly felt well, although I didn't run. So maybe I'll run 1 mile and it'll hurt, something will hurt, but I doubt it. So
yeah. Even though it was a somewhat low mileage week for me, like I still felt pretty good. Like I said, nothing was really like hurting necessarily, and I wasn't super sore or anything. So it was, I felt pretty good except for my Saturday run.
Off day.
Okay. Yeah, it's all right.
So what else is going on?
I think we have kind of just a bunch of random stuff, I think.
Yeah, this morning was funny. I actually had to, we talked about Ragnar several times. We are doing Ragnar Napa in September.
Yeah. So like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like
so that's coming up. Actually, I'm the team captain for our two vans there, our team that's going to do it. I had to request start times this morning.
Yeah.
So got that out of the way. So hopefully we'll have our start time within a week.
I don't remember how long it takes for them
to actually process it.
I don't think it.
It
takes very long.
Yeah, so. The way it works is they take your average team pace, and then they give you options to choose from, and you kind of pick your three most desired start times, and you submit those. So like we had the option of starting as early as 5:30 or as late as 8:30 a.m. on the Friday. So I did request the later start times that were available because I didn't really there's kind of no reason at a Ragnar to start at 5:30 in the morning unless you truly need the time.
Right.
But I think we'll end up running. We always run a bit faster than what our average pace gets inputted at.
Yeah.
So
I think we'll be okay, even if we get the later start time.
That's no big deal. But yeah, and then I think in the last 2 weeks, I had to send like a lot of emails to our teammates for Ragnar and try to get things organized. Who's going to be in what van? And we're trying to figure out, I guess the way we're doing it is me and you are actually running in separate vans, mm-hmm. like we did Napa last year.
Yeah.
I'm taking van one, you're taking van two. So I'm captain of the whole team, but I'm captain of my van. And then you kind of take over as captain of van two.
Van two.
So, we're each kind of coordinating or trying to figure out who's going to run, what legs and
in
all that
van.
Stuff in each van.
Yep.
And figure that out. At least I think we don't have to rent vans. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think
luckily
we'll have
we have one person. See, here's your Ragnar tip. Always, invite somebody to do Ragnar with you that owns like a van or a Suburban or something like that. Makes it way easier to go to Ragnar, or at least makes it cheaper, I guess.
Cheaper.
For everybody. So, what else is going on? Tinkerbell half marathon at Disneyland, which happens in July. No,
January.
We're in July now. Sold out this past week.
Yeah, I remember
so
telling something like that.
That's like 6 months out.
Right.
So a popular race, Disney World marathon in Florida. The marathon is 72% full. The half marathon is 63% full, and the Goofy Challenge, which we're crazy enough to do, is 86% full.
Yep.
So a lot of people signed up for that.
So if you guys want to do any of those,
so if you're looking to travel for a race,
that's true,
which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Or you happen to be in Florida or the East Coast somewhere and you want to go do it. I guess register sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think especially if you want to do Goofy, seems like that's gonna sell out
first.
And I'm assuming that they have the lowest number of spots available for that, anyways. That's my assumption.
Although,
I didn't read that anywhere, but
yeah, if you're undecided, if you look on their website, they seem to be constantly updating the percentage.
Yeah.
Of how sold out it is, because we actually looked right before we started recording, and it was like a couple percentage points different than I think the weekend when you last looked it up.
It was about a week ago.
Or a week ago.
Yeah,
so every week they're
frequent.
At least they're updating it. So you can kind of wait a little bit longer. The other big race, Big Sur, full marathon, right?
Yeah.
Which happens in April.
Marathon.
Registration opened
yesterday at 7 a.m.
7 a.m. And today?
It's closed.
It's sold out. I think they made the joke it sold out in 26.2 hours.
Yeah.
They post that on their Facebook page
or something?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it was exactly 26.2 hours, but it's got to be close to that, I think. But it's like record fast for them. I think last year they said registration sold out in, 29 days last year, which I thought was pretty quick.
Pretty fast.
But, compare it in 1 year, 29 days to like 26 hours. Wow.
Yeah. So, if you're not familiar, Big Sur is a race that happens literally right down the coast of Central California. So, very scenic. Because you're literally running down the coastline. So you basically look at the ocean
amazing.
The whole time. So it's a favorite for a lot of people. And, for me, that's a bucket list type of race that we said a couple months ago that we're not going to do next year, but maybe.
Maybe the year after.
So that would be 2014.
Yeah.
And I guess based on this, I think if you want to do it in 2014, you're going to have to register
morning of,
within the first couple hours, because it seems like every race lately sells out faster and faster.
Yeah.
There will be spots. I think they said they're going to open up 200 something spots for as a fundraising thing. So
yeah. Well,
if you desperately want to do it, you can still find a way in. Go ahead.
I have a question.
Okay.
Just on your thoughts. I don't think we've talked about it, but so what is your take on, like, you know, people who wanted to sign up for a Big Sur marathon and just realized that it sold out, weren't planning to register for a charity, but, you know, maybe you're thinking about doing it now just to do it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, we kind of talked about last week about, was it last week or the week before, about them when they save those spots for charity?
Oh, yeah, when they
save them. Which I'm not really a big fan of that. Although, you know, I'm sure the charities are well worth the fundraising. I think I looked at Big Sur real quick. I don't think it was that much money to do one of the fundraising spots.
$275. So, yeah, it's not in
comparison
to
other. And that
includes
your registration.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a big difference between something where, you know, if you did team and training or something and you're going to have to raise $1,000. This one's pretty straightforward where you just pay whatever it is. So I'm actually okay with it if it's something you really want to do.
Yeah.
And you really want to do it next year. Then
you
I
just
don't
happen
think,
to miss the registration window.
Yeah. Then I don't think, what'd you say, 275?
275.
I don't think that's, for a full marathon that's supposed to be as beautiful as Big Sur, I don't think that's, and you know, and some of that money goes to charity.
Right.
Or a lot of it. I don't find anything wrong with that, actually. I mean, I would probably pony up the money.
Yeah,
if that
really
was, if I like had planned on it and just kind of missed the registration window, because you know, $275, but you know, at least $130 of that goes to charity. Curious to know if you can deduct that on your taxes, that portion.
I
of
doubt it.
It.
Although you should,
you should be able to.
Be able
part,
to.
But yeah, I think it's worth it.
Yeah. Okay, I was curious. So. They do have other distances though
that are open.
Yeah, so they have like a 21-miler, which I think runs the full course of the 21 miles is also the same course as the full marathon, but minus the 5.2 miles. So they have a 21 miler, they have a 10.6 miler, a 9 miler, and then a 5K, and then relays and kids 3K. So they do have other events.
That you can do.
That you can do.
I'd feel a little weird doing the 20, what is it, 21 miles?
21.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
Distance.
Like, you might as well just do, well, I mean, obviously you can't now, but
is,
you might as well just do the full.
You might as well wait a year and just come back and do the full.
Right.
Just because it's kind of an oddball. Did you run, I don't know, do you say you ran the Big Sur Marathon?
I guess you say you did the 21-mile distance at the Big Sur. Yeah, it gets kind of complicated. Even 10.6 is a little odd.
Well, I mean,
9
is
a little odd.
I mean, there's a big difference between 10 and, I mean, it is odd, but at least it's, you don't feel like you're getting gypped in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, like so, between the 21.
Yeah. I mean, it's 10, you know, I don't know. I actually wouldn't mind doing a 10-miler, but I think logistics-wise, traveling to Big Sur, because I think you have to bus to the start from the finish line, and if you're doing the full or the 20-miler, and I think it's a very long bus ride, and you have to leave really early.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they do it for the shorter distances, but that could be quite a logistics commitment that you have to do it. So.
Well, plus some of the shorter ones I remember reading before, I think like the 10.6 and the 9-milers, I don't know if it's for both of them, but at least one of them doesn't share the same course as the longer
totally
one,
different.
So it's a totally different course, which I guess is good and bad, because then you get to see a different part of the coast, I would think, but I don't even know if it goes along the coast. I'm assuming, you know, you get to see a different part of the coast, but then it's, you know, yeah, it's going to be a logistical
nightmare.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's kind of what's going on with the big races, at least that we're familiar with. I know we kind of skew towards the West Coast a little bit. A crazy story I wanted to mention. Oh, before I get to that, I forgot to put it in the rundown. Motorola's Moto Active watch for running their GPS heart rate monitor thing. Prices just came down this week. So I think they dropped the retail price of the 8-gigabyte model to $149, which I'm looking at Amazon. You can actually buy it for $139 with free shipping, which I think the article that I was reading mentioned that it's maybe $100 cheaper than it was before.
Whoa, that's a big difference. Why do you think? Did they say why it dropped? Or
oh no, I'm guessing it's just the age of the unit. I don't know if they have something new coming down the line, you know, sales have kind of flattened out. I know they've kind of marketed it a lot at races, because we've seen Motorola at a lot of different expos that we've been to, and even some of the smaller races, like local community races. There's been kind of somebody from Motorola out there showing off the watch. So haven't tried it myself.
I must have been completely oblivious to the smaller races.
Yeah, it was at I know you are. You were oblivious. It was at Brazen's Trailquake.
Oh.
Motorola had a tent there.
Well, that's why I was oblivious. Yes,
you were a little dehydrated at the time.
Because I was just oblivious to the world. Okay. That's so, yeah. Funny. I'm like, I don't remember seeing them anywhere.
So, you know, neither of us have tried the Watch Out. So no endorsement there. You know, I have no idea how it works out one way or the other. But if you've been kind of on the fence, a price drop might put you over the fence right. To get one. So, yeah. I don't know. Not a big fan of Motorola stuff, I guess. But
yeah. No, but if somebody was planning on getting it or was thinking about it, it sounds like now might be a good time.
And if you just bought one a week ago, bummer. Sorry about that. Great. Because you kind of overpaid. But that's what you always risk when you're buying, especially electronics. So
that's true. Even like phones and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the article that I did want to mention, I found on Runner's World, randomly came into one of my feeds, was a story that's not funny, but kind of funny in a way. I'll be messed up and say it's a little bit funny. And I don't know where this was at, but a runner was out doing their kind of their neighborhood run with their dog. And I'm kind of, let me see if I can read straight from the article here. She was on her way home from a jog in Lakewood's Fort Steilacoom Park. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. When her dog got away from her and chased two raccoons up a tree. When she went over to grab the dog's leash, several other raccoons came out of a bush and started to scratch her legs. They chased her for about 75 feet. Then several knocked the 28-year-old woman down and continued the attack. She ended up with, I think, 16 puncture wounds. She had to go to the hospital, obviously, to get antibiotics. So even the article says, what the hell? Raccoons are supposed to be cute. Well, kind of. Raccoons can be...
Not cute.
You know, raccoons have quite a bit of attitude.
Yeah, they do. They'll eat your food too.
Yeah. You know, I mean, raccoons are most known for getting in your garbage cans more than anything. But it's funny because, I mean, we've talked about safety before. Never thought in a million years to mention, beware of the raccoons.
Right. Like raccoon safety.
Raccoon safety. So that's why I say it's kind of funny, but not funny. I mean, certainly it wasn't funny to her getting injured like that, but yeah, so I mean, you got to keep your eyes out for even more things than we expect. Really,
no kidding. I thought I was. I mean, I don't know, between like cars and bikes and dogs, and now I have people. To add raccoons. Yeah, yeah, people.
Yeah, I never knew raccoons to hang out in packs or anything. That's almost what the article seems to allude to. Right. I mean, I've seen them hang out in families and stuff.
Gang of raccoons.
Yeah,
just waiting or protecting the three that were chased into the tree.
Yeah, I mean, obviously one of the problems was, I guess, the dog, you know, chased him up a tree.
Right.
And probably ticked him off and stuff. But yeah, animals, I guess, something to be wary of also. So,
you know, it's interesting. It says that they, like, you know, were scratching her legs and they, you know, chased her down and stuff like that. But it doesn't say anything about them attacking the dog.
Yeah, I don't know what ended up happening.
I wonder if they even
bothered with the dog.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Yeah. So, so that's our story. So we get to kind of the main topic we were going to talk about today, which was traveling and running.
Mm-hmm. Or I guess more specifically traveling and racing.
Right. Okay. So to destination races,
which is
kind of relevant to us because we're going to, we mentioned Disney World in January, and we're also doing a rock and roll Virginia Beach.
In September?
Yeah, so we're going to the East Coast for that. So we're going to be traveling to some upcoming races, and we've traveled for a few races already this year.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we've flown to one already, or flown for one.
And then two long drives to the other.
I guess two others. I guess three if you count Ragnar.
That's right. That's a whole nother. That's a lot of driving.
That's a whole separate. Yeah, that's a whole separate. That's a different kind of traveling for a race.
All right, so what you got for us?
All right, so yeah, it was a pretty good article that I came across in Runner's World, of course. I think it's the June 2012 issue. So it talks about just kind of tips and things to keep in mind when planning or going to do like a destination race. And it talks about everything from, like, you know, the race logistics and that, and then even just the travel part of it. So it's kind of split up into a couple of different parts. So I just thought that was pretty interesting. I thought a lot of the tips were helpful. And we'll definitely keep in mind, like you said, for when we travel, but just kind of wanted to share some stuff with everybody in case they're planning to do some destination races soon or later, you know, and just kind of keep that in mind. So I guess the first thing is kind of choosing your adventure. So kind of deciding what is kind of the priority as far as you know, vacationing or traveling and racing. So is it because you want to race? Is it because you want to run your dream race, like a specific one? Like, let's say people from the East Coast were coming out to do Big Sur, you know, so you want to do that specific one. It's not just any race, it's doing that specific one. Or is it because you want to see a particular race and then you just, I mean, a particular place and just want to find a race there? Or is it because you want to bring family along? So kind of splitting those up. So as far as if you want to race, you know, like really race like PR or something like that, make sure you give yourself plenty of time to adjust. So, you know, obviously I think this goes more for like flying and that sort of thing versus just kind of driving to a place. But I guess depending on how long you're driving, it could apply to that too. You know, if you're like driving out of state and that sort of thing. So talks about arriving at least 3 to 4 days before race day. That way it gives your legs a chance to kind of, you know, get used to the new time zone. I would say not just even your legs, but your whole body. You know, your sleep cycle, your eating cycle, your bathroom cycle, whatever it may be, you know, just kind of getting used to the new time zone. And then one of the recommendations from actually Bart Yasso, it says to take one full day to rest for every two time zones you cross. So I guess if we're going to the East Coast.
Day and a half?
I think so.
That's kind of an odd number. Yeah. It's kind of funny when you mention that. The recommendation I've always heard from people is, let's say you're taking a week vacation to go do a race somewhere, is to do the race at the beginning of your vacation.
Right.
That way you can kind of get it out of the way early and then...
And then enjoy.
Kind of do your recovery and enjoy your vacation rather than doing it at the end.
Yeah.
Where you're kind of... You're worried about what you're going to eat or how tired you're going to be going into the race.
Right. Yeah, I've heard it. I've heard that quite a bit. Like.
Yeah. But I mean, based on that, maybe the best thing to do is kind of go... You know, travel out maybe 2 days, 3 days before, do your race, and then maybe
have some days after. Time,
yeah, do like 4 or 5 days after if you could. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe like fly in like Thursday or Friday for like a Sunday race and then something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it would help if you can take like 9, 10 days off for vacation, but that's really tough for people.
Yeah. And then where would that race fall in between?
No, you can travel. You can travel like on Thursday. You'd go to your expo on Saturday, probably. You run your race on Sunday, and then you have the entire following week to do the race.
That would work.
Now, that would actually be 7 days off of work, if you, assuming you work Monday through Friday. So that's actually not bad, but a little bit longer than you might want to take for a lot of vacations.
Right. So, and that's actually funny, because the next thing where it says, you know, if your goal is kind of to run your dream race. So, like, for example, we'll just use Big Sur as, you know, as an example if people are traveling to that. It says you can run it earlier in your trip and have plenty of time left to play tourist. So that way, if that's like your main focus is the race, then, you know, have that earlier. It doesn't say you do it like right away, but have it earlier in your trip. That way, then you can kind of just, you know, relax afterwards since the race is really your focus.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think actually maybe in some ways the best thing to do is fly Friday, expo Saturday, race Sunday, and then vacation after that.
That way gives you some time to get used to.
Yeah, because I don't think it's fun if you're doing one of these big races and you have to go to the expo on Saturday, traveling on Saturday and making it to the expo.
Right.
And then to your hotel. And I think that's a lot to do in one day. So maybe Friday is kind of, maybe that's the best way to go.
Yeah, if nothing else, that just makes for a really hectic, busy Saturday.
Yeah, you're just basically going to be super tired at the end of the day. So, and that's not what you want to do going into your half or your full on Sunday.
Right. So the next thing is, if your goal is to see a place and then you just want to, you know, do a race while you're there, it says once you know your destination and trip dates, check out, you know, like they have some different websites online where you can, that you can use to locate races in a specific area, even out of your area. So they list a couple of them here. And then it says stick to distances of a half marathon or shorter. After a half, most people can do anything in terms of walking and hiking. So that way, if you do a marathon or longer, I mean, you might be wrecked for a while and it may kind of ruin you visiting whatever particular place you're wanting to go to if your focus is really to see that place. Their example is actually like, let's say you want to travel to Australia and want to do a race there, you know, then stick to a shorter distance. That we could actually enjoy being in Australia versus, oh, okay, now I'm wrecked for a couple of days because I can't barely walk or something.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that.
Yeah. If the, you know, if your main goal is you want to bring your family along, one really interesting tip that it says here is let the non-running spouse pick the destination. I thought that was pretty...
It's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean,
if your spouse is a non-runner, and you're already sticking them with going to a race, the least you could do is kind of let them, I guess, pick the race or the place.
Yeah.
That way, at least they're getting stuff
that they want to
do on the trip.
Exactly, since you're going to do your race, And then, you know, adding to that, it says a goal race should plan the event early into the getaway. So the real vacation starts after the run. So that's kind of similar to having like the destiny. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one thing I was going to say is no matter where your spouse or your kids maybe want to go for their vacation, there's like a race there anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You'd have to pick a really obscure place for there not to be any type of half or full marathon nearby at some point in the year.
Yeah.
Like everywhere you go, there's races now. So.
Although I guess if you're just kind of like assuming you're traveling within the U.S.
I guess I was considering U.S. Okay.
And then something else interesting if you're bringing the family along is if you're running an ultra in the middle of nowhere, book separate hotels so your family can stay somewhere fun and then drive in for your big day, which makes sense to me too. Like if, I mean, it's going to be a pretty small percentage of people,
mm-hmm.
but if you're kind of doing an ultra kind of in the middle of nowhere, like, and you maybe have to stay there the night before or something like that, maybe your family can stay a little bit further away, you know, mm-hmm. or they can actually drive in for the day to see you, but don't have to stay in the middle of nowhere with you for like a day or two.
Maybe they can just drive in for the finish.
They could.
That's assuming you don't need your spouse to crew.
Right.
Which you might need.
Right. And that's assuming your spouse isn't running and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And then just a random traveler tip related to that. It says, consider how the distance and terrain will affect your travel plans. So you may not want to promise the kids a long hike the day after, you know, like a marathon mm-hmm. or something like that.
Just
so that
kind of goes along with.
Exactly.
That doesn't take too much planning.
Nah. It's just keeping it in mind, I guess. So are you finding these helpful at all? Or?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're pretty.
It's actually making me think a lot about, like I said, the races we have coming
planned?
Up. Yeah.
Are you like taking notes? No.
Yeah, taking notes, kind of. Although we've already kind of set on dates and stuff like that. So
right.
we're kind of committed to that. And I guess for Disney World, I think we're doing the race towards the end of the trip.
Right.
So we're kind of doing it against what we just said. But I think that was based on work dates
that
we could do it. I think we would have done it the other
flexible.
Way. But yeah. So so bummer we're doing it the wrong right. way.
Although, I mean, with doing Disney, you know, doing Goofy... Like, I don't think either one of us is interested or our goal isn't like a particular time or PR or anything
right.
like that. So it is kind of going to kind of be like a pretty low key fun
just there
race
to have
for
fun.
Us. Yeah. So it may not be bad that it's actually at the end of our trip because we're not necessarily focused on like our pace.
Mm-hmm.
And so it may not be that
yeah,
bad
no, I think
versus going to some of the marathon where we want to like
PR.
Yeah. Or yeah. something like that. So the next, like topic or whatever was, you know, okay, so now that you've decided like making it happen, so like booking, you know, travel plans and all of that. So one, of course, you know, finding a flight. So an interesting tip was avoid window spots. It may be hard to sleep in an aisle seat, but as a runner, you want to have mobility and, you know, freedom. So you want to be able to get up and kind of stretch your legs whenever you want. So getting an aisle seat would probably be better.
More important if you're doing a long flight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you are leaving the U.S.
Right.
Or it's a super long flight.
Exactly. Another one is adjusting your schedule. So if you're crossing time zones up to 6 hours or more, ease the transition by gradually adjusting your sleep schedule forward or back starting 10 days before you leave. I don't think I've ever done this.
I've never done that, and I don't think I could.
Yeah.
That would just get in the way too much before your trip.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I think it's good in theory if you're able mm-hmm. to do it. I think for me, it's just like, the week before you travel, whether it's because of a race or not, it's just things
it's
are kind of hectic. And, mm-hmm. you know, with work, you're trying to, like, catch up on work and... You know, or get ahead if you can, if you're in the type of job where you can do that. Or even at home, you're trying to do last minute things, you know, pack,
yeah,
buy
just,
stuff.
Just
so
the last
I think
minute
it's
packing
just,
will kill you.
Yeah. So if anything, I mean, usually it's more hectic and tend to get less rest anyway. So I think it'd be tough to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
But in theory, it sounds really good.
Right.
So if you're able to. So next thing is confirm your start time. So, and this is actually something we talked about before. I think when we were, I don't remember what topic we were talking about, but so, you know, Confirm your start time. So if you're going to be running like in the evening, say it's an evening race,
mm-hmm.
you know, do some practice runs in the evening
mm-hmm.
at home versus always running in the morning at home and then traveling for this evening race like Rock and Roll Las Vegas or something. You know, don't let that be your first evening run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, practice it ahead of time.
Right.
So that's actually something
we talked about before.
So, and then of course, making reservations. And in this case, they weren't necessarily talking about hotel, but they're talking about the night before.
Yeah. If you go to any race, any big half or full marathon, pretty much every Italian restaurant that you'll find the night before will be super busy or just all the reservations will be booked.
Right.
Because, you know, so many people have that carbo load thing in their head. So they head to the Italian place.
So if you want to do that, reserve.
Reserve early.
And do it ahead of time. That way you don't end up with like a 3 p.m. dinner time mm-hmm. or a 10 p.m. dinner time, unless that's what you want.
Yeah, my suggestion for that a lot of times is, you know, if you're set on that Italian dinner or something, a lot of times you can travel, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes away from the race and you'll find mm-hmm. an Italian place or whatever you're looking for that's not packed and that's not super busy.
Yeah.
You know, you might want to stay out of that downtown area or that couple mile radius around the Expo Hotel.
Right.
Where, just venture, you know, tons out a bit of people further. Are there. Yeah.
You have a lot more options if you venture out further.
Yeah, because you're actually going to probably save some time if you just travel 20 minutes for dinner versus trying to be like right there in downtown if it's like a big city race or something like that.
Right.
If you're going to a, you know, a marathon in a smaller town, then I got nothing for you. Get Chinese food, maybe. I don't know.
Because, bring your own food.
Yeah, bring your own food. I mean, well, you can always do that if you want, but that's not my recommendation.
What, bring your own food?
Yeah, bring your own
food. Yeah, probably not if you're like traveling, like flying to right. And there's something interesting that actually I'll skip to that one now. When you talk about bringing your own food, it actually says bring fuel. So it says you know, leave nothing to chance, especially if you're traveling abroad. So if you must have a certain flavor gel or bar, bring it. Mm-hmm. So maybe you're not bringing your own meal, you know, pre-race meal, but definitely bring, like, if it, like for you, if you have to have your chocolate outrage goo, you know, and we're traveling abroad, bring it. Mm-hmm. Don't assume that it's going to be there, that it's accessible. So actually, I think we learned that even just when we traveled to Hawaii, not for a race, but we just happened to be there and decided to do a race, and then we couldn't find any goo.
Yeah, I didn't bring any goo, and I was like, oh, I could really use some goo. And we were in Kauai.
Yeah.
Had no idea where to go.
Nope. We actually went to a couple places looking for it, but
yeah. So not there. I don't think there was any running store in Kauai where we were at. Actually, I've been to the Big Island.
Yeah.
To a running store there.
Right. Yeah. But
not
was,
on Kauai.
Yeah. So. I don't think there was one there. So another thing is nail the logistics. So, you know, print out maps, you know, ahead of time. You know, I think this is applicable to like
every race.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. What were we going
to
say?
It's applicable to every race.
Oh, that's good advice. I like that.
And then you could always ask for directions at the hotel's reception desk or the tourist info office. Or locals, if you want to do that too. And then come prepared. So research the course beforehand. You know, if the website, you know, isn't specific enough, you can try to, you know, look at forums online and, you know, see what other runners are saying. And then a really good thing is know how many aid stations there are and what they serve and how they serve it. So they give an example of like the Comrades Marathon in South Africa, which I think happened just a couple months ago. You know, they provide energy drinks and water in plastic sachets.
Don't know.
Okay. In little plastic containers or bags, let's say that, that you have to tear with your teeth. And then they also have real food like baby potatoes in the second half of the 56-mile race. So kind of being prepared for that. If you don't know, don't assume that they're going to be providing what maybe you get at your local races, which I don't think most people would, but just being aware of that.
Same rule of, you know, if you're going to take sports drinks during the race, just check to see what they have.
Exactly. So it's kind of expanding to that, I guess.
Yeah.
And then note the markers. And this is really important if you're traveling out of the U.S., that the markers are going to be in kilometers and not miles. So know what your pace is per kilometer, where you should be. If you're, you know, trying to PR or, you know, get a particular time, adjust to kilometers and not miles. So that would be a big difference
for us Americans.
Yeah. And it's funny because somebody commented in here that they actually like the kilometer markings better because you see them more often.
Uh-huh.
So you feel like you've progressed more.
You're accomplishing more. Exactly. During the race.
Exactly. And then as far as packing goes, you know, they recommend for your carry-on packing all your race day gear in your carry-on bag.
That was going to be my suggestion. Okay. I even wrote a note on not sure to forget that. You did. I did this right here.
And then bringing a backpack that can double as your pre-race bag if you need that. Use a carry-on with wheels. The last thing you need to do is pull a muscle carting a duffel.
I don't know about that. I mean, your carry-on can only be so big, but...
Yeah, but I think most people do, when they do carry-ons for luggage, they do the ones with the wheels. Or backpacks.
Right.
Or backpacks.
Yeah, but that was totally going to be my advice. Is I know when we went to Arizona.
Right, yeah.
For my first half marathon, I definitely took in my carry-on, my race shoes, socks, and shorts, I think, if nothing else. So
so you had your absolute essentials.
So I had my absolute essentials. So take the running shoe. You know, wear the running shoes on the plane if you have to. I mean, that's no big deal. That's kind of easy, and you'll probably actually be more comfortable.
Right.
It's not like you're going to log a lot of miles walking up and down the plane.
Exactly.
So... And it's more important if your race is at the beginning of your trip than at the end.
What, to have your...
To have the carry-on stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your race stuff on the carry-on, yeah. Because, I mean, if you lose... If the airlines lose your luggage, you'll usually get it within 2 days.
Hopefully. So
if the race is... Hopefully. If you get it at all, I guess.
Yeah, I guess just make sure you have it with you.
Yes. I did have on a trip within the past year where my luggage did get destroyed. Came back to me off the belt at a baggage pickup in, like, a huge plastic bag. Thankfully, everything was there, but...
It was all busted open.
But everything was there. So, but those things do happen.
Right. So just plan for them. And then pack smart, maximize space by rolling your clothes. I think that also helps with wrinkles too, mm-hmm. if you roll it pretty well. And then, you know, stuff your shoes with socks, gloves, bars, wear your bulkiest clothes and shoes on the plane. I guess if, I don't know if I'd wear my bulkiest clothes on the plane because there just isn't that much room with seats anymore.
Yeah, but shoes. I like to be comfortable on the plane.
Yeah, sometimes I do try to wear like... Some of my bulkier shoes on the plane just to have more space and luggage. So
I mean, my suggestion would actually be if you know exactly what you're going to wear for the race, meaning like socks, shorts, shirt, hat, like pack all that together, like right. in your luggage. I mean, you don't have to like. I mean, you could go as far as putting it in a Ziploc bag. That way, you have that. Literally,
I'm thinking
stealing the Ziploc from Ragnar. But yeah, but
which I worked mean, really well in Ragnar,
right?
Because I just pulled out the Ziploc bag and there was my next outfit for right. you know next.
But at least, but it'll make it easier when you go to, you know, as they always say, put your race stuff out the night before. I mean, you're literally going to spend 2 minutes because you're just going to pull out that little section of your luggage or that bag and be like, okay, here's my race stuff. It's ready to go.
Yep.
So saves you time while you're traveling. And then you don't have to go like if you're traveling for an entire week and you're kind of tossing your luggage every day looking for stuff.
It's like, oh, where were those socks?
Yeah, your race stuff won't be all over the place.
Oh, I wore my race socks already because I thought I had another pair. You know, something like that. That would suck. And then bring your own first aid if you are traveling abroad. It says some European and Asian races will charge you to use your medical tents, and pharmacies can be hard to find. So pack supplies to treat blisters, cramps, diarrhea, and soreness.
I never would have thought of that,
Me
actually.
Neither. But it doesn't, I mean, it makes total sense to me now. I just had never thought about it. But again, that's more with traveling abroad. So the next section is, you know, on your way. So, you know, on your flight and that sort of thing. So I guess if you're having, you know, a time change, try to adjust to that new time zone while you're on the plane. So instead of maybe sleeping when you're on the plane, if you're going to be awake at that time, stay awake. And then wear compression socks.
Compression. Love it.
Yep. So the pressure increases blood flow, reduces fluid buildup, and helps prevent deep vein thrombosis or blood clots in your legs or anywhere else in your body. And it also, you know, improves circulation, which can help with the post-flight, like, leg sluggishness that you can have from flying.
I think I will actually, when we fly to the East Coast this year and next year, I think I might actually do that because I do have compression sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I will actually try to wear them on the plane.
I think I'll definitely wear them back.
After the race?
After the race.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the way there.
Yeah.
I guess we'll just have to see.
Yeah, I get really stiff.
Probably not a bad idea to wear them, though.
I get really stiff just kind of sitting on a plane or in a car for too long. And I tend to be the type of person that doesn't, you know, it's good to stretch your legs on a plane, but I tend not to do that.
Right.
I just kind of sit in for the entire flight. And
right. You will, like, not get up.
Right.
Unless.
If I got to go to the bathroom, I'll go to the bathroom. But, I don't really
but
walk
you usually
around.
Don't. It's usually, like, I have to go. So that's the only thing that gets you up.
Well, every time I got up on a plane to walk around, you know, I always get stuck behind, like, the beverage cart or something, and then I'm like, oh, I can't get back to my seat for, like, 10 minutes. This is not good.
And then fight germs on the plane. So apply antibacterial hand gel liberally. That's a good one.
Come on, wear a mask.
I think that's a good tip just in general, not even just with travel, period.
Honestly, if you're going to, like, your dream race or, like, your big, huge race or your, you know, this is my bucket list, you know, been looking forward to this race for 3 years, you know, maybe you want to wear a mask on the plane just to make sure you don't get sick.
Yeah.
You know, depending, you know, if it's like, you know, winter months or flu season type of thing or,
right.
It might be worth just making sure because that would be horrible if you travel across the country or halfway around the world, get to your dream race and then you end up sick.
Yep. And that might be another, reason to kind of do the race earlier in your trip. Because if let's say
you won't have time to get sick,
right? Or if you, you know, if you do get exposed, like on the plane, it's probably going to take a couple of days to hit you. Probably, mm-hmm. I mean, depending on what it is.
What it is, yeah.
And drink often. So dry airplane air causes dehydration, which I always suspected, but never read. and it can compromise, you know, everything from your circulation, and it also makes jet lag worse. So make sure you're drinking a lot. So aim to drink one cup of water every 60 to 90 minutes. I know I definitely don't do that. I always have water with me, but I don't drink it that often.
I mean, they say most people are bad about hydrating when they travel in general. I know that's, you know, I'm bad at hydrating all the time, probably just on a daily basis, but I'm even worse when I travel and don't drink enough water. So if I was going to travel and there was a race there somewhere, I would make an extra effort to make sure I had my bottle of water with me and kind of continuously drink during my trip and travel.
So do you think you'll do that for Goofy or Florida, or not necessarily because that race is at the end of the trip? So
no, I mean, like the whole, not necessarily that travel day, but like the whole week leading up to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't even take the liquid on the plane anyway, so you'd have to buy it after a security check.
Well, that's what I usually do
for the plane trip. But I'm going to make an extra effort to drink lots of fluids, because I'm sure we'll be doing walking around and doing different kinds of stuff. So got to stay hydrated. I'll make the conscious effort.
Good.
I don't want to end up dehydrated.
Thanks. You're just going to throw that in there whenever you can, huh?
Absolutely.
And then pack some snacks. So go prepared with an ample supply of energy bars, mixed fruit, nut packs, string cheese, or whatever, you know, you snack on, you know, because one, do you even get food on airplanes anymore? And if you do, what is that food like?
Not much.
So bring your own stuff, snack-wise. Okay, so the last section is once you land. So first one is...
take a nap.
No. Oh. It actually says the opposite. That's actually, you set that up pretty perfect. It says wander around. After you check in, go for a short walk or run. The most important thing is to become active as soon as you can. If you're out moving around in the sunlight, it helps the body reset your circadian rhythms, and that includes sleeping and waking as well as your normal hormonal rhythms.
Okay.
Yeah. So don't go straight to the bed and take a nap.
I like the nap idea, but that's just me, I guess.
Another thing is follow the masses. So that this goes in regards to eating. So trying to pick restaurants, if you know, haven't picked something ahead of time, go to where like the locals are going to, or even contact the local running club prior to your arrival and ask them where runners go for pre-race meals and see if they have some good suggestions. And then for the meal, keep it boring. Stick to it. This is more like if you're traveling to other countries that you're not familiar with, stick to a white diet and remember bland is good. So like rice, pasta, potatoes, and breads are staples in most countries. So maybe just kind of stick to that if you're not really sure what the meals are.
What to get.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would have a hard time traveling abroad and doing a race just because my stomach tends to be a little testy.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of picky in general anyway, so.
Kind of.
That would be, a little more than kind of, but yeah. Right. That would be a tough one for me.
I think you would do great if we traveled to Italy for a race.
And
actually, maybe not great. Maybe you'd overeat.
I'd overeat too much.
Yeah. And then chill out. So run easy, rest, and trust your training. A slight deviation from the normal won't derail months of hard work. We've talked about that too before.
Yeah, what you do the last week isn't going
to. Yeah. And then it says, better yet, forget about a PR and just race for the fun. After all, you are on vacation.
So, yeah, enjoy the vacation. Enjoy the race.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And then the last traveler's tip was just open up the starting line. You're going to meet a lot of runners, something the normal tourist isn't going to do. They'll be happy to give you advice or information for the rest of your trip, which I thought was a pretty good idea. If you meet, you know, locals, they might give you some good tips on what to go see or do that you might not otherwise find out about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, one of the things I like about when you kind of travel for a race and stuff is you just end up running into a lot of runners just either at hotels or at the air. What's like when we went to Arizona, I mean, how many people did we see at the airport after the race?
Oh my gosh.
With the official race shirt or some kind of shirt that you knew that they were there for the race.
Right.
Or just being in the downtown area, whatever city you're traveling to. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I can sometimes look at people and be like, oh, you got some Asics and Brooks shoes. And I'm like, oh, I bet they're running the race tomorrow. You know, it's like, oh, that looks like a new pair of Brooks. I bet they're running, you know, the half tomorrow and stuff. So you kind of run into a lot of your fellow runners. And I always say runners are good people. So it's kind of fun to hang out in places like that. So
it was even like when we went to San Diego, you know, some of the touristy things that we were doing, you like see a lot of runners. Like when we went to SeaWorld, we saw people, you know, like wearing the rock and roll shirt before the race happened.
Before the race.
But that's a whole nother topic. But you know, then you knew that they were there too, you know, for the race. And
yeah, we saw tons of people. Let's see, the Saturday before the race for R&R San Diego, tons of people walking around and like going out to dinner and stuff, but they're all carrying their expo bags.
Right.
Because at R&R, you get like a black rock and roll bag. So you can always spot those kind of, you know, you can spot the people real easily at that kind of race. Yep. So,
so you see them out and about, like, you know, shopping or wherever.
Shopping and stuff. But like I said, yeah, the restaurants get really busy and stuff like that. So, kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, my one. Let's see. What else? What other advice can we give to people about from our experience? I would say, yeah, we've done CIM, or you've done CIM, which is by car.
Yeah, and not a very long drive. I mean, we're not talking like 4 or 6 hours or anything. It's less than two. It's less than 2 hours.
It's 2 hours, so a short drive, but you still go overnight.
Yeah.
And we you know, my advice is, you know, we go early to the expo, kind of get that out of the way early in the day, and then
try not to do too much walking.
Yeah, but a little bit of walking.
But a little
bit
of walking.
Yeah, because you got to kill some time and stuff, and then do dinner.
Shopping.
And then I always say the night before the race, you know, get to that hotel early.
Yeah, and kind of crash for bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, go to bed early if you can.
It really should be dinner, and then you're done for the night. Then it's right. Hotel. Check your race stuff to make sure you have everything, and then crash early. Because a lot of these races, you know, you're going to have to get up at maybe as early as 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got to catch a bus to a start line or anything like that.
Yeah, so. I think for CIM, definitely, I think 4 o'clock or something. So, yeah, I mean, other races, I'm sure, even earlier. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think definitely get to bed early. Lay out your race stuff.
Before.
And I even like get my, you know, my race day food out. Cause I'm basically just a peanut butter sandwich. So I get that out and ready. Yeah, that way you minimize what you have to do the next day. Cause you're going to be nervous and that sort of thing. So just kind of take care of it the day before if you have time.
Yeah. Sometimes you put your bib on the shirt the day before. Mm-hmm. I don't go that far. I like to put the safety pins on the bib. That way they're
not on the shirt.
That way I don't have to I don't know. Fumble. When you wake up early, you're like, oh, where's all the safety pins, or at the bottom of a bag or something. So I always put the safety pins on the bib. That way, at least that's ready to go on. I don't know why I don't put it on the night before. Well, you know why I don't usually put it on? I usually can't decide what shirt to wear until like race morning. I'll narrow it down to like two possibilities and then decide on race morning. So that's why I don't attach mine. I just remember that.
Yeah. I think I really change what shirt I'm going to wear on race morning.
Mm-hmm.
Unless like the weather's drastically different. And at that point, okay, I'll just, you know, take the bib off of the old shirt and put it on the new one. But for the most part, I think I pretty much know what shirt I'm going to go with. So I just put it on there. So it's one less thing for me to do. I don't, you know, one less thing for me to forget, you know, don't forget the bib. And then, it's easier to put it on straight too when you're not wearing mm-hmm. it.
Actually, that leads me to another thing is if you're traveling to a place, you think you might know what the weather's going to be like, but sometimes the weather will surprise you.
Yeah.
So don't, you know, if you're going to Arizona or Florida or someplace warm,
that's right.
Bring something for a little bit cooler weather just in case. You never know. I've been traveling places and the weather is just the complete opposite of what I thought it would be. So kind of, you know, take an extra shirt,
mm-hmm.
you know, take that, make sure you take your throwaway. You don't know if it's going to be cold or not.
Right.
Beforehand. So
I think it seems like lately too, like weather's been less predictable.
Yeah, I seem to get weather wrong a lot.
Yeah.
Just like on my regular weekend runs when we kind of go somewhere to run. It's like, oh, I thought it would be so much warmer than it is, and it ends up being cold, or it's the exact opposite, you know? So,
although I think you tend to err on the side of, I thought it was going to be warmer and it's colder. I think you've done that more times.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And I'm paranoid. So I'll wear like whatever shirt I'm going to wear, but then I take like one colder and one warmer in the car just in case, going out, you know, if we're driving out to a weekend run. So just in case.
Yeah. So that's some ideas of some stuff to think about if you're traveling to a race. I'd definitely recommend traveling to a race. It's kind of fun whether you're going for the weekend or a whole vacation. I think it's fun to have a race in your vacation,
mm-hmm.
to have that kind of thrown in there, especially if you're a runner. You know, they always joke that, you know, the only time runners take vacations is when you're going to a race or you never do a vacation without doing a race.
It's so, not a vacation unless it involves it.
Right. So, yeah. Or, you know, you can't imagine going someplace and not doing a race there. So, right.
Although the other things too to think about is maybe you're not doing all this, you know, preparation ahead of time for a specific destination race. But if you're going somewhere, like you said, just kind of look up, see if there's something there. Because mm-hmm. I know that's what we did in Hawaii. We weren't going there for a race.
Yeah, we just
happened
one
to find
while
one
we were there.
That was really close to mm-hmm. where we were at. So we ended up doing it the day we actually flew out, I think.
Yeah, we just kind of randomly. I don't even know how we found about that in a paper or
something.
Some posting somewhere.
Something.
It was like a couple days before.
And yeah,
we said, oh, might as well do it.
Yeah, might as well sign up. And it's kind of nice, you know, like when we've never done a race in Hawaii, and
mm-hmm.
I think it was like a 10K, so it was a good distance, and it was kind of fun.
I don't think we had done any races at that point out of state, right?
Right, that was our first one.
Yeah, so yeah. Maybe you'll get on your way to doing, you know, a race in every state type of thing. Maybe not 50 marathons, but
no, I don't think I'm up for that.
Yeah, so that's the tips for traveling for the show. That's going to kind of do it for this week. I forgot to mention Badwater, right?
Yeah. I thought you were just going to leave it for the end.
Well, I didn't intend to, but Badwater ultramarathon, I guess you call it an ultramarathon, right, is happening today.
Yes.
July 16th. So Badwater, big time ultra, 135 miles yes. from Death Valley out to Whitney, California.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely one of the toughest and one of the hottest, craziest races you can do.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Because the temperatures can, you know, I don't know if they're always over 100.
It's but Death Valley.
But yeah, Death Valley. Call it death for a reason. But that's going on today. So it'll be kind of interesting to see who wins that one.
So good luck to everybody out there, either running or crewing or
yeah,
putting on the race. And make sure you guys hydrate. You don't want to get dehydrated.
Yeah, I'll have to, after we're finished with this, I'm going to go check the weather because I'm just kind of curious what it was there today.
Oh, gosh.
And what it's going to be maybe tomorrow. Just to kind of get an idea. I'm just kind of my own curiosity. Never going to do it, but that's something totally awesome. So yeah, I think that's going to do it. I was going to mention, Chris mentioned on our Facebook page, she was doing the Jungle Run, or she just did the Jungle Run half marathon.
Yeah, yesterday.
In Los Gatos. So good job doing the race.
Yeah, congrats to her.
Yeah, it was actually funny hearing you mention that because we get emails from the timing company that did that race.
Yeah,
so I actually
yeah.
kind of considered doing that race several times.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool to kind of
yeah, because they did so. Pleasanton, right? I think it's like SVE. Endurance, or no, do I have
this?
The
I think this is First Wave.
Oh, First Wave.
A different one. Yeah.
So First Wave does something else we've been
something
to,
else
but,
we've done.
But they've done a good job. So
Santa Cruz?
I think so, actually.
Yeah, I think they did Santa Cruz.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a cool race. Maybe someday we'll actually get down there to do it. So that's going to kind of wrap it up for the week, I think. So you want to give them the info?
Sure. The website for the podcast is embracerunning.com. Facebook page is facebook.com/embracerunning. Send us any comments, questions, feedback, or if you have any traveling tips. For races and running, feedback at embracerunning.com. And that's going to do it for us this week. So until next time, keep running.